Listen to Lisa while you're at work. WICC600.com. Back to the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC600.
The Connecticut Post is reporting that our own Congressman Jim Himes, lately seen a lot on CNN, I might add, who is joining us now from the 4th, will be leading some kind of a congressional something or other with respect to addressing the huge wealth gap in our society, and none more pronounced, perhaps, than our own wealth gap, illustrated by the difference between the per capita income of someone who lives in Greenwich, for example, and somebody else who might live in Bridgeport. Congressman Himes, welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
So I see your familiar face on TV a lot, Congressman.
Yeah, well, one of the nice things about this new committee on this issue that is, I think, so important to all of us, so important to the country, is I'm going to get to take my eye off the ball a little bit with respect to things like, you know, the Department of Justice seeking the email records of members of Congress and that kind of thing.
Yeah, how do you like that? Oh, my God.
Yeah,
Were you one of them?
Conversation, but
were you one of them?
No, I was not. I was not. It looks like there were just two members of the committee and their families, and then there was a whole bunch of staff, which really aggravated me. You know, I mean, these are young people who aren't making much money, and, you know, they and their families had their records subpoenaed and this kind of thing. And so, yeah, no, it's pretty outrageous. I mean, you know, we apparently have to view everything through partisan lenses these days. But, you know, Americans really need to think about what it means when an entity as powerful as the Department of Justice can secretly just say, hey, we want your emails, we want your texts, we want your kids' emails and texts. That's a pretty scary place to be.
We know the FBI has done it for ages and ages, right? And they've done it because theoretically they were investigating and had probable cause for a crime. This seems to be something much more like a fishing expedition into somebody's motives.
Well, it does. And you're right to highlight that. I mean, yes, the FBI and our local police, you know, if they can show a judge that they've got probable cause that you committed a crime, you know, they can get a warrant. And that's always been true. But this looks like something different. This and you know, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it because I know you want to talk about other things. But this looks like going after political opponents. And that's what happens in banana republics, not in our republic.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. Merrick Garland's already getting points for trying to be even-handed, even with respect to the Trump administration. He's earned a lot of points with a lot of people who were sort of suspect that he would be part of a political operation there.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's exactly the right approach. I would never in a million years, even though I'm a supporter of President Biden and I wasn't of Donald Trump, I would never in a million years say, I hope Merrick Garland, you know, backs up Biden. That was the problem with the Trump administration, was the Department of Justice, enormous power, arguably the most powerful federal entity with respect to everyday Americans, used for the benefit of one president. That just can't happen. So, yeah, I'm delighted that Garland is getting back to that tradition of independence and really staying out of politics.
We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes. So, Congressman Himes, I give you credit for having read a lot, and I assume that you read the front page incredibly deep dive that the New York Times did in the last few days about private equity firms and detailing the list of individual Americans of high net worth who don't pay any income taxes at all. And this idea that because sophisticated businessmen have a network of partnerships, they perfectly legitimately, but with a lot of high-priced advisors, avoid income tax. And even though they do it legally, it really smells. It really smells to high heaven. And the lack of auditors within the IRS has also meant that if you earn $25,000 or less, you are three times more likely to be audited than somebody of major wealth in this country. Did you see that, Congressman Himes? Did you see that?
Oh, I sure did. I sure did.
I mean, come on. What are you going to do about this? Come on.
There's two things going on here, right? One is we just have to face up to the fact that over the decades, the tax code has become much easier on people who have wealth and who make dividends and capital gains. You and me, who work for a living, you know, if we do well, we're going to pay a maximum rate of You know, ultimately, I suppose if Biden has his way, 39.6, we're a little bit lower than that right now. We had an episode, I remember when I started doing this, where capital gains were taxed at 15%. Well, who makes capital gains? People with capital. Who works? People, you know, people who aren't wealthy enough that they don't have to work. So, yeah, we've got a tax code that goes harder on the wealthy, for lack of a better word, than it does on people who work for a living. And then, of course, what else can the wealthy do? I'm not saying this is illegal. I'm not saying it's wrong. But the wealthy can afford to hire very sharp tax accountants and tax lawyers to find these loopholes that New York Times article was about. And, you know, to my way of thinking, you know, you can bore people pretty quickly on the tax code. But daggone it, if you get a dollar of income from investing in the stock market, you ought to pay the same rate that I pay or you pay or the guy working out there as a police officer or firefighter pays for making a dollar of wages.
And if that means that the rate overall is too high for people to swallow, you can make it uniform and dip the rate.
Right. I mean, we got to separate two things, mm-hmm. right? Because they're both good conversations. We should have one conversation about how much money we need, and that has everything about spending and taxing. At some point, the amount of money we bring in and taxes is going to have to meet the amount of money we put out. And it hasn't. It hasn't since the late 90s. It hasn't under Democratic presidents, and it hasn't under Republican presidents.
No way. It's not going to.
That's one conversation, which is a good conversation. But then there's a totally other conversation about fairness in the tax code.
Yep.
And the tax code is not fair. So you could even start that conversation by saying, okay, we're going to bring in the exact same amount of money. Let's start there. No, we're not bringing in more money. We're not growing government or whatever. But let's make a fairer tax code. And you would tax people with great wealth more, and you would tax middle class people, working people, less. There's just no two ways about that.
The first income tax code in 1913, which of course we had to have a constitutional amendment to pass, was all about, and many people don't know this or remember it, but it was all about being quote unquote progressive. The original federal tax code was about evening out the excesses from the late 1890s and the Cornelius Vanderbilts of America at that time. And it was really about squishing it a little bit, trying to make the income tax code a tool of wealth distribution or redistribution. That's what it was about. Now, it achieved excesses during the Eisenhower administration. The top tax rate was, what, close to 90%? And that just became too much to swallow. So a movement of pushback came back at it. But we are now at a point where if you're in the business, Congressman Himes, of trading for a living, and that's how you make a living, trading stocks for a living, you actually get taxed at a lower rate than doing anything else for a living. That's not fair.
That's exactly right. I would actually say it's worse, Lisa. If you're a trader, you know, you make wages. If you do nothing for a living other than collect dividends and interest on millions of dollars of bonds you own, you do nothing except collect dividends and interest, you're going to pay a much lower rate than that trader who is working for a living, or the teacher or the firefighter or the police officer who is working for a living. That's just not right. Now, the argument goes that, well, we need to have low taxes on the results of investment because then people will invest more. Number one, that's not clear. There's not a lot of facts that back that up, that, you know, people invest based on the tax code rather than on what they perceive as good investments. But number two, it's just not fair. I mean, as you point out, why should somebody be taxed, in some cases, at twice the rate on the dollar they make working overtime at the fire department against what they made if they, you know, were collecting dividends on a stock portfolio?
It doesn't make sense to me. So what is this that you're in charge of in Congress now? What is this new thing?
Well, good lead-in, right? Because the tax code will be one of the things we look at for all the reasons we've been talking about. But the Congress has established a select committee on economic disparities and fairness in growth. And you said it exactly right when you introduced it, which is where we're sitting and talking right now. You can be standing in the 2-acre backyard of one of the wealthiest people on the planet, and 10 minutes later, be in an apartment with a single mom who doesn't know where she's going to get the dollars to feed her kids that day. And, you know, that just, you know, the Catholic bishop said this once, you know, great wealth is not sinful. This is their point of view, except in the context of great poverty and great need and great want. And, you know, that kind of disparity, it does at least three things to my way of thinking. Number one, I think it destabilizes our political system, right? When most people feel like they're getting screwed, sorry for the blunt talk, by the system, and a couple of people, a small number of people are doing really well, people eventually say this system doesn't work. And we don't have time to talk about it, but I happen to think that that's a big part of why Donald Trump, whose message was you're getting screwed and the system's rigged against you, got so much political authority. Number two, it challenges our economic system. It slows our growth. If people can't afford to buy cars, the car businesses are going to suffer. And then finally, and arguably most importantly, I think for most of us, regardless of where we are on, you know, the political spectrum, it kind of offends our moral sensibilities, right? Greatest country in the world. No country in the history of the world has produced as much economic opportunity, and yet we look down the street and we see dire poverty, kids going hungry. You know, that's just not morally something that I think any of us are comfortable with.
But in terms of taking that new select committee and making it actionable, what do you anticipate? And by the way, is it bipartisan or only Democrats? What is it?
No. It's bipartisan.
Okay.
It's bipartisan. And, you know, when Speaker Pelosi asked me to do this, I was obviously very honored. But I thought, oh, my gosh, we're going to talk about a hugely controversial topic in one of the most polarized Congresses ever. This will be fun. But I think you start obviously we're going to disagree on stuff. Right. But we're going to start on the agreement that the gap, the economic gap is not partisan. Yeah, here in blue Connecticut, you got the difference, as you put it, between Greenwich and Bridgeport. Oh, my God, go to Appalachia, which is ruby red, politically speaking. You know, go to Mississippi, which is ruby red, and I think the poorest state in the country, and you'll see the same kind of disparity. So we're going to at least start with the notion that, you know, this disparity, this wealth gap exists regardless of whether it's a Republican or a Democratic area, and we ought to think about how to address it. And you know me, you know me, Lisa, you've known me a long time. I'm going to start with the proposition that we got to be able to find some ideas that Republicans and Democrats could agree on.
I think that's right. I think you will.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, obviously,
you know, people will instantly go to the ways where we disagree and how terrible it is that the other side disagrees. But I'm really encouraging all my members. I'm going to go sit with each one of them and say, let's surprise the American people by starting with some things where we agree.
Well, how many people are on the committee?
I think when all is said and done, there's going to be about 16, 17 members.
And are you going to have like a co-chair from Republican side?
So there, in any committee, there's the chairman, that'll be me, and then there's what's known as the ranking member, which will be the lead, the senior most Republican.
And right? Who is that?
So Kevin McCarthy, who's a Republican leader, hasn't named him yet, but I don't mind telling you, I approached Kevin McCarthy on the floor yesterday and I said, look, Mr. Leader, I want you to know I'm going to play this straight. You know, I'm a proud Democrat, but we're going to be fact-based here. This problem is too important for us to make yet another stage for us to throw mud at each other. We're going to play this straight, and, you know, we'd be grateful if you appointed people who will be open to that.
We're chatting with Congressman Jim Himes. We've got a bunch of people who are holding. Will you take a couple of calls from the audience, Congressman?
Sure.
Okay, great. Let's go first to Daniel from Reading. Hey, Daniel, you're on the air with the Congressman. Welcome.
I initially called to voice my support for Congressman Himes. However, I actually am a day trader who gets my living. I make about 50 grand a year, and I just wanted to say it's very you talk about unfair. Congressman Himes makes 175 grand tax free and yet wants to tax me more. I apologize. I'm out of breath right now because I am ripping up a kitchen floor because I cannot afford to have someone come and do it for me.
Okay. Well, Daniel, thanks for the call. Go ahead. Go ahead, Congressman.
I think I can make you a little less angry because I don't know where you got the idea that members of Congress don't pay taxes on their income. My income is taxed.
No, you specifically. No, you specifically. And also all the money that you get.
What do you mean you specifically?
Because of your corruption.
All right, Lisa, Daniel, no, we're not going to do this.
Every member of Congress,
we're not going to do this.
I don't know what he means by me specifically, but every member of Congress is taxed on their wages the same way Dan is taxed on his wages.
No, Daniel, Andrew, Daniel, you're done. You're not on the radio. You can't speak. you can't speak disrespectfully and make accusations that you can't back up. That's not true. Congressman, you pay taxes on your money, don't you? The amount of taxes that
the IRS asked me to pay on my income. And Dan, you know, here's the thing. You can be disrespectful. I'm okay with that. Some people decide that they will compromise their own dignity by acting with disrespect. What you don't get to do is to spread lies in a moment of dramatic misinformation. And the fact is that every single member of Congress, you can say they get paid too much or they can get paid too little, but they pay taxes on their income. So the idea that we don't pay taxes on our income is simply not true.
Yes, I know that. I imagine, Congressman Himes, I'm guessing that you, like every other person with a W-2 paycheck, have a net amount and a gross amount. And the net amount is the amount that is withheld from your paycheck for taxes. Would that be correct?
That's exactly right. I get a W-2 and I pay at the same rate that anybody. It's a matter of public record. Members of Congress are paid $174,000 a year, and I pay the same taxes, you know, adjusting for things like mortgage deduction, all that stuff, that anybody else making that amount of money pays. And I pay, you know, there's another sort of crazy idea out there that members of Congress don't pay Social Security. I pay Social Security, you know. So anyway.
Right. No, that's true. 203-333-9422. By the way, Congressman Himes, we have had a bunch of teachers call in throughout the shows, and they would very much like to see a change in the law that would allow them to be able to collect Social Security benefits for their spouses, which apparently, if they've been a teacher, they're not allowed to do. Are you aware of this?
Yes, it's a huge problem. Teachers generally, certainly in the state of Connecticut, I think in most states, have sort of a special pension plan, if you will. You know, they pay into a pension, and as a result, they don't pay into Social Security, but then they don't get Social Security benefits. Now that may be okay. The problem is that sometimes a teacher who maybe spent, let's just say, 10 years or 15 years as a non-teacher, as a, you know, whatever, firefighter, police officer, and paid into Social Security, sometimes their ability to get paid that Social Security that they already earned is compromised. And so I won't go into the details because they get technical pretty quickly. But, yeah, we need to fix this whereby, you know, you get out of Social Security regardless of who you are or what your profession is, what you put into it.
Yes, but also, and that's true, but also another little weedy thing is that we had a teacher call in and say that her husband's Social Security would have been higher than hers, but she wasn't able to get his.
Yeah, no, it's a, you know, I think it happened back in the 80s. They were concerned about certain professions double dipping, and I obviously wasn't in Congress at the time, but it's a fix we need to do because, you know, at a time, especially now when we're really celebrating the heroism of our teachers, who are not a particularly overpaid or even well paid profession, you know, to saddle them with this quirk in the Social Security system is a real problem.
And I've got one other for you, Congressman Himes. I know this is a Social Security question, but If somebody puts in for Social Security and then they pass, their entire life savings of putting in for Social Security passes with them to the extent that if they leave a surviving spouse, the spouse only gets to choose the higher of the two and doesn't get to collect both. But when you really think about it, if you have money in a private pension, the surviving spouse gets the pension and then would also get whatever they put in as a working person for Social Security. Why is it that you only get one of the two and not both if a working couple both contributed to Social Security?
Yeah, I think the idea, well, so the I think the underlying reason there is that some benefits transfer, as you pointed out, and children actually can benefit if there's minor children,
yes,
right?
Children
dependents
do.
As well.
Yes.
But I think the idea is that you've got a system that, particularly now, is long-term insolvent. And I want to be very careful about that because people say, oh, my God, Social Security is going away. It's not going away. But right now, Social Security has promised to pay out in the next 75 years a lot more money than it's taking in. And so consequently, the Social Security Administration is always looking for ways to make it more sustainable. And this is one of those ways.
It's a conversation about fairness. We're not going to solve it today.
Yeah,
but I just want you to know that a lot of people are raising it because years ago when we first talked about Social Security, we had many more families with a one-earner family. Now you've got two-earner families coming to retirement, and they don't think it's fair. And I understand that argument.
Yep, you're exactly right. In fact, you know, when we were kids, the country was full of more traditional families where you had a father working and a mother acting as caretaker. That's not obviously true of everybody, but that used to be the norm. Today, that's not the norm
anymore.
It's
not the norm.
Right.
So, yeah. All right. Well, anyway, Congressman Himes, thank you for coming on. As always, thanks for being open and accessible to us here on the Lisa Wexler Show. Good luck with this new committee. We'll be watching you with great interest to try and figure out a way to make it fairer for everybody. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Lisa. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Congressman Jim Himes on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be back tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow is a very big day here on WICC 600. It is the Radiothon Day, and it's a very exciting day. Melissa in the Morning will lead you up at 5 a.m. I will not be on air tomorrow, but I'll be back behind the mic personally on Monday. But stay tuned for Paul Pacelli from 2 to 6 p.m. tonight. And Dave Ramsey coming up right now on WICC 600 and WICC600.com.